Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Minneapolis-based veteran jazz drummer Peter Kogan. He has a new album out. It's the 2022 CD Just Before Midnight, his fourth album since 2013, charting his constant evolution and production. He is the rare percussionist who has been able to travel back and forth between jazz, rock, and blues idioms, and even the classical world. He jobbed around New York City with jazz, rock, and blues bands for a long time, but he can also stand behind the timpani in a concert hall with a major symphony orchestra, and all of this comes together to make him who he is. His story is unique. Enjoy this tale.
Peter, thanks for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So before we get into Just Before Midnight, I want to know, it's been a quite eventful 2 years on planet Earth, and I'm wondering, and alive, how you've been doing through this pandemic as an artist. I mean, it's been, you know, everything's been turned upside down. How did you survive it?
Well, I must admit, you know, the initial phase, 2 years ago in the spring, I had all these gigs lined up and even a festival in Iowa lined up for my quintet. And it was everything was canceled. All the club dates were canceled, you know, and so I ended up with this big stretch of time, like everybody, you know, where I was just, at home. And I had a bunch of projects on the back burner that I was kind of negligent and also, you know, kind of resistant to finishing because it would be a lot of work. But I kind of forced myself to get going. And once I did, I came up with some new compositions, finished some long, outstanding things, all of which ended up on the recording that I made this January. So it was actually a very productive time. I also did a lot of practicing. I started during the summer, I started inviting people over to play on my backyard lawn and had a lot of fun bringing in people I knew or didn't even know so well, who wanted to get a chance to play. I kind of had a portable keyboard back up there, and I brought the drum kit up from the basement, and people came over, and the neighbors loved it too. We were giving like the concert every couple of weeks, as far as they were concerned. As far as we were concerned, we were just jamming and trying things out. So, in that sense, it wasn't as bad as it might have been for some people. That led to eventually a year later having some summer gigs, and before Omicron hit and Delta hit, there were some good times in the clubs for about a month. But I was able to get the new stuff played, and that led to recording last January. So in a sense, it was productive for me.
So Just Before Midnight, talk to me about how you put this album together, and more importantly, how it feels for this to come out now as everything kind of opens up and we hopefully get to a much better place.
I'm hoping things will get better, although, you know, the news in general has been pretty terrible, you know, in every respect. So I just try and keep my nose to the grindstone. I do have a number of projects going on that are not related to the album, like a Bird and Dez legacy band. But having played the album in its entirety last Saturday night, it was sort of the CD release party at a club called KJ's in St. Paul, and it was great to sort of get that done and get it out there. And I'm just hoping people will love the album. The album should be a feel good album for people, I hope. And that's sort of the idea.
Have you played live gigs lately?
There have been some gigs coming up. Like I say, over the summer it's a little easier. I have the quintet. My quintet is playing at what they call Twin Cities Jazz Fest. We're playing in a place called the Metronome Brewery in downtown St. Paul on a Saturday the 25th. And that's very gratifying. And then a couple of weeks later, I'll be playing at Jazz Central with the Bird and Dez Legacy Quintet. I also reconnected with a wonderful local saxophonist named Brian Grivna, who was alumnus of the Buddy Rich Band many years ago. And we're doing a quartet gig at the Atrium, which is just off of the concert hall at Orchestra Hall in Minneapolis. So I have a few little things coming up like that, and I'm looking forward to those and being able to play out again. You know,
and I guess that's what I'm trying to gauge is, you know, the audience. You know, what you hope both musician and the audience actually gets from this long time away from live music.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of enthusiasm from people who are coming back out. And when we played on Saturday, there were very few people wearing masks. So they're not required anymore in the clubs. And some of the gigs I'm doing will be outdoors this summer. So I'm looking forward to it. I think that there is a hunger for the live music, and we're seeing that around town. And it's not quite where it should be, but it will eventually get there, I think. Hopefully, as COVID turns it more into like something just perennial colds, we hope it goes into that mode, then the audiences will return. And certainly musicians are just dying to play, you know. So.
Yeah, for sure. So how did this whole jazz journey begin for you? How did you fall in love with playing and getting into jazz?
Well, my parents were big classical music fans, but they also had some jazz records around. And they had some Fats Waller sides. And we had a neighbor who was a real jazz aficionado. And he started, when I showed interest in the drums, because I'd been playing violin and piano starting at 6 years old, and I started playing along on records with pots and pans, you know. He started bringing over jazz records for me to listen to, and so I got a taste of jazz, you know, as a young kid. And I was very fortunate. I was sent to a music camp when I was about 13 years old, and the great bassist Chuck Israels was related to somebody at the camp, and he gave a class in jazz. And I remember we all started learning Charlie Parker tunes. So this was a long time ago, and I immediately got into the Charlie Parker recordings. I started picking them up, and in those days, those old Dial records were being reissued on LPs, and you could pick them up at the supermarket or at the drugstore for a couple of bucks. And so I got my first Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker records there. And then I continued listening to jazz. I was living, brought up in the New York City area in New Rochelle, New York, and I could go into the city and hear jazz as a teenager. Some of the clubs even had a non-drinking section for younger people. So I was able to hear some of the greats, you know, as a kid, like Charlie Mingus and Dizzy, and went down to Birdland, heard Count Basie, you know. So it was a great time for me, and I put together a jazz band with some friends in high school. Had very good training. I had, you know, music lessons. I had drum lessons. But at a certain point, I decided that I would do well in the classical area. So my teacher was Saul Goodman, who was the timpanist of the New York Philharmonic, and he urged me to go to Juilliard, which I did, and that led to a whole series of classical orchestra gigs. So the jazz was kind of set aside for a while, actually many years. I did, when I was about 30 years old, I kind of, you know, did an early retirement from the Pittsburgh Symphony, and I went to New York and played drum set for about 6 years. And then at that point, when I got married, I went back into the classical fold. And it wasn't until maybe 2008, 2010 that I started playing drums again in any serious way.
Being at this for as long as you've been at it, what is the best part of being a professional musician for you?
Gosh, you know, they talk about, you know, where is your high? But, you know, when you're playing with good musicians and playing good music, whatever the context, it's just like flying. You know, it's just a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And it's, and you feel like you're connecting with all the great musical masters, you know, when you're playing. So, it's just a great thing to be able to do. I'm very grateful for that.
So, you know, over this time of, you know, self-reflection during COVID, I'm sure there's been a lot of memories of being, you know, playing live and things that you've done throughout your career. What are you proudest of? When you look back and think about what you've done over your career, what really brings a smile to your face?
You know, I achieved playing with some really fine orchestras. So I'm very proud of that. It was a lot of work, but I felt like I filled the jobs well. I think, but what I'm really proudest of now is making this transition back to being a jazz musician from being a classical player. And these last few years since I retired from the Minnesota Orchestra have been some of the happiest in my life.
You know, I don't know a whole lot about Minnesota. What's great about living and being up in that region? What's the caveat of being a jazz musician up there?
It's a very warm community of musicians. It seems like everyone's supportive of everyone else. It's not a huge bunch of players. As I've gotten into it, I've expanded my knowledge of the players around town. And there are lots of small scenes with local bands that have followings that play locally. But there are a lot of very serious young players who've come into town who want to try new things, who are very studious about taking the job seriously. And since I have people coming in to read my charts and learn my charts, I've just been, you know, gratified at how well people pick up on what I'm trying to do. It's a fairly small community, but it's a great one. There are a number of key people, I think. One is Max Santiago, who's a drummer who has Jazz Central Studios set up as a nonprofit, where there's always a place for a player to try out new material and do a gig there, or to rehearse there. You know, so he's one of them. There's a trumpet player named Steve Kenny who's developed a way of supporting people playing at specific venues that he can subsidize and pay for their playing. So there are a few people like that who are keeping the things going in town. And new clubs have opened, so it's gotten a little bit better. As some have closed, others have opened.
Why do you love jazz?
Gosh. I love rhythm. I love the dance aspect of it. And I think that's one of the main attractions I've had to music, you know, right from the get-go. Something bouncy that makes you want to move. And I think that's my connection to the drums and to playing jazz.
So everyone has a perception of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. Who do you think you are?
It's a really interesting question. Sometimes I know and sometimes I don't know. But, you know, it's kind of mysterious how, you know, music comes into your life and becomes part of your life. And it's not really cut and dried. You know, some of the tunes on this latest album came in a dream, you know. You don't know where these connections are in your mind or, you know, in the spirits. And it's always a little bit of a mystery. I think I try to be a good husband and a good dad to my daughter and try and be nice to people. And that's about as good as you can do, I think, in the world right now.
Hey, man, this has been great. I really appreciate you opening up about the new material, Peter. Good luck with everything as we move forward.
Okay, thank you, Joe. I really appreciate getting a chance to talk to you.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Minneapolis, Cleveland, Austin, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Peter for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. And finally, for all things Joe Domino, JoeDomino.com, and there you can donate via Patreon or PayPal. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.